Hey everyone, I'm Sarah.
And I'm Alex. Welcome to the Crime Times podcast, where we talk about everything to do with true crime. Okay, Sarah. So this is going to be an interesting one.
This is a lot.
It's a lot. We just have to give a quick content warning. There's probably going to be a few of these in here, but we should start off with one now. What Homolka and Bernardo did was disgusting, it was depraved, and it was heinous. The details of this crime are scarring to many people. Not a lot of people can handle certain things that we are about to say. And there is absolutely no shame in that. And we encourage you to click off if you think that this will affect you. And go watch our first podcast last week. You know, it was a bit lighter than this.
It was a lot lighter.
It was. So just want to kind of get that out of the way now. If you even know a bit about this case and you know it will affect you, trust me, we're going to go a bit deeper. And if it already affects you, you don't want to hear what we're going
to say. But I will say we will not be going as deep as you think. We will not be saying anything in detail, nor will we give you any links. If you want to go find it yourself, go ahead. It's on the internet. That's all we'll tell you.
The Discovery Plus documentary that first aired back in December 2021, but the most recent episode was just in February 22nd of this year was the last episode of the docuseries. So it's called Ken and Barbie Killers, The Lost Murder Tapes. If you want to go watch it, you can sign up for a free week, 7-day. I swear this isn't an ad, but you can go do that. I liked it. What did you think, Sarah?
The documentary?
Yeah, what'd you think about it?
Well, I hated what it was about, but it was put together very well. This docu-series goes into a lot more detail and releases a lot more information that was not known prior to it coming out. That's another great reason to watch it, because if you think you know everything about it, you don't.
This is the first time they even say this in the docu-series that people are really, really going to be introduced to what was on these tapes, because there's a publication ban, and rightfully so. You need to protect the victim. I mean, we haven't fully explained what the tapes will, and we will explain, and we will explain why the publication ban is there.
The episodes ranged from about 40 minutes to an hour, but in all honesty, they flew by.
Yeah.
And you got a lot of information, and each episode is about one thing. Like, for example, the last episode is about the trial. The third episode is about the tapes themselves. They did it like that.
It made it easy to follow, because you knew.
And if you don't want to watch about the tapes and you just want to watch the trial, you can just watch the last episode.
That's also a very good point if you want to avoid the, what was really on those tapes.
Exactly.
The docuseries, the first episode, to kind of set the tone for you guys, starts off with a man named Bill Greckle. This poor guy went to Lake Gibson in Niagara Falls, Ontario, to go fishing, and he comes upon a dead body of a young girl floating in the lake because the waters were shallow. This is later found out to be Leslie Mahaffey, 14 years old, who was kidnapped by Bernardo and Homolka. That's how this starts off. So already it's very intense. This guy, Greckle, is talking about how scarring it was for him. He can't even look at a picture of Mahaffey anymore. He said something interesting, which I'll include a clip of, where he was speaking about how he couldn't even appreciate at the time how horrid this was. I'll include a clip right now.
It was a beautiful day. I said, the hell with it. Let's go have some fun, get in our canoe, and just have a great day. Well, it didn't end that way. It was calm water, fairly shallow.
that's how I saw it. I didn't appreciate what I saw. I didn't understand, like, can't put words to it. The indignity to a human body, knowing it was a younger person. Until this day, it still bothers me when I see your picture.
Bernardo was the Scarborough rapist. In August 1989, that was 2 years since the first attack of that Paul Bernardo did as the Scarborough rapist. So he first attacked in 1986. By that time, in 1989, he had stalked 7 young girls off of buses and sexually assaulted them. This did jump, I read at one point, to him to 23. By the time he was, you know, done.
Caught, yeah, I guess. Pretty much.
So some people may also not know how Homolka and Bernardo met. At least I didn't.
Neither did I.
So we can give a quick description on that. It was Jennifer Black was actually Homolka's coworker and friend. Homolka referred to Black as her big sister, and Black referred to Homolka as her little sister. They went to an event one night in Toronto, and that's where she met Bernardo at a bar. So Homolka was 17 years old. Bernardo was 23.
I don't know how she even got into that bar.
Yeah, it's interesting. Black said that her and a few other unnamed friends were there. There were two other unnamed friends. Black and one of the unnamed were older. And Homolka and the other friend, unnamed, were in one room separated from them. Black and the older unnamed friend were actually unaware that the younger ones had slipped out into a bar. But they became aware of it, followed down. That's how they met. So now we can go into Tammy Homolka.
Now we're going to get into Tammy Homolka, which is Carla's younger sister. And I'm putting very much emphasis on Carla's younger sister. She was 15 to be exact. What happened with her was in July, Carla first spiked her with Valium in her spaghetti. Paul then raped Tammy.
And it's important to note that while Carla did steal the Valium for Bernardo from her own workplace, she was not in the room the first time Bernardo had stolen. And I emphasize stolen. Tammy Homolka's virginity.
Then, December, a Christmas party, she then spiked Tammy's drink with halothane, which, if you don't know, is a vet anesthetic, and she put it right to her sister's face.
And as proof that she put it right to her mouth, when Tammy was found, she actually had red burn marks all over her mouth. And Bernardo and Homolka then claimed that it was carpet burn when she passed out.
I mean, I've had carpet burn. It looks a lot different than, like,
actual chemical burns. Yeah. Yeah. Another thing important to note is that Bernardo and Homolka did not intend. We do not know if they intended to kill Tammy that night. And there is a theory that Homolka was a vet tech. She knew what this would do to a human, yet she still held it at Tammy's mouth for a long period of time.
It's not direct murder. Even if the intent to murder her sister wasn't there, she knew what the outcome could be.
And it worked. Their excuse was that Tammy passed out from too much alcohol. They had no clue. They heard a thud and she choked on her own vomit and they had tried to help her, you know, whatever. And they got away with it and it wasn't even investigated as a murder.
I remember the parents telling Carla to make sure Tammy doesn't drink a lot.
Oh, yeah, they did.
Yeah.
They did. They did. She was only 15.
I remember the most I drank at 15 was like a glass of champagne at New Year's.
This documentary doesn't only talk about the tapes that were disgusting and showed them, you know, torturing and sexually assaulting these young girls. They also showed tapes because Bernardo was fascinated with just recording everything. And his friend of, at this point that this was made, he would have known Bernardo for 30 years. He goes by Mark. He remained anonymous. So Mark says that Bernardo had a camera and he was fascinated with filming everything. So we also saw just these quote-unquote innocent tapes of just him. A
modern time vlogger.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Back in the day.
Exactly. We just saw tapes of him taping the family, the Homolka family, and having a good time.
Just normal, innocent exactly. tapes that you would... And literally, my dad has shown me many tapes that he has taped from the 90s. It was just a thing.
Yeah.
A lot of people just taped everything.
Exactly. And one thing that really grossed me out, knowing what he did to Tammy, was seeing in a tape where he called her little girl and she called him Uncle Paul. And that was really gross to me. And it gave me the shivers. So that was one thing about the documentary, which is a bit jarring, is knowing what they did and then watching these innocent tapes of how they interacted with poor young Tammy, who loved them. And it's
Uncle Paul.
Uncle Paul. Oh, God. It gives me... I gotta say...
Let's move on from Tammy. Yes. Because that one just... I don't want to say it hits harder than the others because it doesn't. But just something about Tammy is just... I don't...
It was her sister. I mean, again, it's important to highlight Homolka offered her sister to Paul as her virginity.
The because... fact that... Paul was 23, mm-hmm. maybe 24, who I don't know when his birthday is mm-hmm. exactly, but he was in that age range.
Yeah.
And he was lusting over a 15-year-old.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That in itself is pretty
and messed Homolka, up. Homolka knew this. She did not break up with him.
She, in fact, suggested it even more.
She said... to Bernardo, she will offer up her sister Tammy Homolka's virginity because Carla Homolka was not able to offer up hers to him. So the next one that not a lot of people, again, something I did not know. And I don't think when I spoke to my parents who were around for this case, and it's a bit close to home for us. My parents didn't even know about Jane Doe. So
I didn't know about Jane Doe.
Exactly.
So I this thought one, every victim died.
Yeah, me too.
Honestly.
Me too.
And I didn't think there were a lot.
Mm-hmm. So what happened? This one was pretty
incriminating.
Incriminating. towards
it was lighthearted.
It was pretty incriminating towards Carla because in this tape, so this was a tape of Jane Doe. This was, you know, in court. In this tape, it actually shows Homolka had actually befriended Jane Doe, which is strange because Homolka is a grown woman and Jane Doe was underage. But, you know, what is not strange about this case anyways? Basically, what had happened was Carla became friends with Jane Doe. This is all without Bernardo knowing. By the way, so this incriminates her a lot because she played the victim, but these tapes show that she actually befriended this underage girl. We call her Jane Doe because she was underage. We have to protect her identity. And because she lived, she brought Jane Doe back to the house that her and Bernardo shared in St. Catharines, Ontario at the time. She drugged Jane Doe, called Bernardo down, and gave Jane Doe to Bernardo as a wedding surprise. Bernardo then proceeded to rape her for a full minute before Jane Doe woke up. They didn't kill her. She was let go because she wasn't going to remember anything. And in fact, she did say that she did not remember anything for a long time, which is common in, you know, victims who are drugged. It takes a little bit for all of that to come back to you, if at all.
Yeah. she has to live with this still to this day.
Leslie Mahaffey.
The runaway.
The runaway.
Quote unquote.
The runaway. Quote unquote runaway. 14 years old. Around 1 to 2 a.m., she had gotten home and the door was locked.
Her parents locked the door as a lesson because she was not home at the curfew her mom implemented because of the Scarborough rapist.
And this was also a year after the last known Scarborough rapist attack, which, I mean, as a mom of a young girl, if you know that there is someone running around sexually assaulting these young girls, do you lock your daughter out of a house in the middle of the night? The detective of Toronto Police, Steve Irwin, was assigned to the newly formed sexual assault squad that was actually made because of the Scarborough rapist. Her parents had reported her missing, and Irwin said that she was classified as a runaway, and they did not look into it.
Because a year before, she ran away.
Yeah, she had run away previously.
So just because one time she ran away after a fight with her mom.
Some could argue, you know, the rapist had just hit a year earlier. Why not look into it a little bit? Just in case. Why immediately just write this young girl off as a runaway? She's 14 years old.
Yeah. I don't know why it's so normalized for a 14-year-old to run away and just, oh, she ran away.
And then she was found dead, floating in a lake. I don't want to say how. It was pretty gruesome how this poor girl was found. But one can only beg the question if they had just looked into it. If they had just looked into it. But on one of the tapes, she was found with Bernardo and Homolka to be sexually assaulted, you know, raped and tortured.
We are going to talk about Kristen French, 15-year-old. You're going to start to notice a pattern here. They are all not of age. So, 10 months after the whole Mahaffey situation, Bernardo and Homolka kidnap Kristen French in a church parking lot when she was walking home from school, and that's when they started again. Won't go into much detail, but they basically did the same thing to her as they did to the others. After killing her, they tossed her body in a ditch near the cemetery where Leslie Mahaffey's remains are buried. The difference between them, French wasn't blindfolded and definitely could have identified her attackers. But Bernardo and Homolka clearly had no intentions of leaving her alive to begin with.
These tapes don't show them killing and murdering these girls. All they have is the he said, she said of the trial where Homolka says Bernardo killed the girls and Bernardo says Homolka did. Bernardo says that he had no intent of killing the girls. He blindfolded both of them. They both had no clue where they were. They were drugged. He didn't want to kill them. Homolka says the complete opposite, that he was the one who wanted to kill them. And yeah, and they were, Mahaffey and French were killed with an electrical cord around the neck. Content warning, the biggest, I know we gave one, but this is like the biggest content warning that we're gonna give right now, and possibly the biggest content warning of this entire podcast series of the next few weeks, and that is the fireside chat. So, as we said, the tapes were put on publication ban because it re-victimizes the victim every single time you show it. The girls were underage. Really horrid things were happening on it. And a law clerk on Bernardo's defense Kim Doyle.
Honestly, not to take away from anything, mm-hmm. but in the documentary, she was my favorite.
Kim Doyle was great.
She really fought for one of the victims' mothers to not be in there while
the tape
was playing, but the mom insisted. Just shows how
exactly
tough this was for everyone to watch in that courtroom.
Exactly.
And live. Like,
yeah. So Doyle had said, even without the publication ban, if the media had seen what was on those tapes, there's no way they would have been released to the public. Homolka portrayed herself as the victim. She was not. And every person who saw those tapes said in this docuseries that she was never a victim. That she willingly did this. She led things. She led Jane Doe to Bernardo herself. He didn't even know about her. This is why we say this. Because it's important to note that Homolka was not a victim. She was just as bad as Bernardo, possibly worse. Why did she get off? So, Bernardo's first lawyer. When in police interrogation, Homolka had mentioned tapes. And this was the first mention of the tapes ever. And she had mentioned that there were tapes filming all of these girls' sexual assaults, including Mahaffey, including French. She did not, however, say her involvement in it or where they were. She just said that they existed. Then Kim Doyle, the law clerk, and Bernardo's ex-lawyer, Ken Murray, went, found the tapes. And Ken Murray withheld the tapes for 15 months because he wanted to show them in trial as kind of a shock. To say that Homolka, to discredit her as a witness. And because this was withheld, everyone believed Homolka was the victim, so she was offered a plea deal. 12 years for what she did. 5 years for Mahaffey, 5 years for French, 2 for her sister. Should he have withheld the tapes? There, a lot argued, a few people, including the lawyers of Bernardo, argue that if these tapes had been shown when they were found, Homolka would have been right up there with Bernardo. She would not have been a witness and she would not have been offered a plea deal because everyone would have known that she helped rape and sexually assault her sister. She helped Leslie Mahaffey and Kristen French die.
And the fact that this is all known and she is still free.
Yes.
And not going back into jail is just very disturbing, especially since she has 3 kids of her own. As a parent, I would not want my kids going over to that house.
Yes.
Speaking of which, would now be a good time to bring up Paula Todd?
Of course.
Speaking of her house.
So after she had gone out of jail, it was unknown where she went. She changed her name. We knew she had changed her name and she took off. And Paula Todd, the journalist, had tracked her down in Guadalupe.
Yeah. And went into her house.
She went into her house. So we were able to interview Paula Todd. The only problem was that, unfortunately, Todd is actually sick right now. She got COVID, so, you know, good vibes. We hope you're okay. But she was still willing to do this interview. We just sent her the questions over email, and she just responded back to us in email. So all we are saying her answers, quote for quote, of what she sent on this email.
We would have loved to have her as an actual interview, which was the original plan, but unfortunately, this is the best we have, and we are very excited to even have this. So
yeah, she gave great answers. So
we'll each just do one by one. Exactly what I was thinking. I guess Alex will start.
Sure. Our first question to Todd was, what was the setting like? We wanted to know what exactly was Todd walking into here when she found her.
Like you're going into, like, I don't want to say like a serial killer, but like a serial rapist, then a killer's house.
Yeah.
Alone.
Yep. So Todd says, so we said, what was the setting like? Todd said, or typed, I found Homolka living in an area apartment in a large compound in the hills of Guadalupe. When I was led to her apartment by a relative, I realized the stairs we were climbing were encased in a wrought iron cage with a padlocked door. I almost turned back because I knew well what had happened to her victims. But I was there to see whether Homolka was, as some suggested online, teaching or trying to contact young girls the same age as she and her then-husband, Paul Bernardo, kidnapped, sexually tortured, and killed. I wasn't going to turn back now that I might be so close.
So, the second question we asked was, what was the first emotion you recall feeling when you walked into the room?
Right when she walked into the door.
Paula answered and said, shocked that I had really found Homolka. She had been gone for 5 years, and I learned later that many journalists around the world were looking for her. Her eyes met mine, and we both jumped.
Oh, could you imagine meeting the eyes of Carla Homolka?
After knowing.
After knowing what she's done. This is after everything. Remember, this interview is after everything has come out. Homolka is out of jail, but everybody knows now. And she met eyes with her. Whew, I'm getting shivers. We want to say thank you again, just before you continue. Paula, you really gave us some amazing answers here. And we just want to thank you. We know you're feeling under the weather, but these were great. So thanks for giving us the time. So our third question was, how do you recall feeling during the entirety of the interview? Todd said, nervous, but keeping a firm hand on my emotions. I was very, very alert to everything I saw and heard. I knew I was at a risk, but the thought others might also be gave me a sense of mission that overrode the fear.
Our fourth question was, in the Discovery Plus documentary, they often say Carla portrayed herself as a victim. How did she portray herself to you? Todd said, she came across as strong, threatening, and in charge. At one point, she mentioned that she was never going to be swayed again by another person, presumably referring to her defense that Bernardo, also the Scarborough rapist, forced her into the crimes. But there was no sense of victimhood about her when she said that. I've interviewed thousands of people over the years, many victims. If she was one, she presented much more confidently than I'd seen in other cases.
Our fifth question, was there any point in the interview where you felt scared? I thought that was a pretty reasonable question. We thought it was pretty reasonable to ask.
Mm-hmm.
Todd typed, I was on high alert all the way through my time in Homolka's apartment. We sat on either end of a couch in the living room, both very wary of the other. The most frightened I was, though, occurred after the interview. I left after dusk and walked back down the cage stairs myself. This is, okay. This part, I remember when Sarah and I were reading this, we were just out and about before we filmed this. And I read this to her and both of us like stopped and kind of gasped. My heart dropped when she said this. I don't know if yours did too. Mine dropped.
Mine did.
She continues. So she said, I left after dusk and walked back down the cage stairs myself. Suddenly, her new husband was behind me very close and he startled me. I had a taxi waiting and ran to it.
So our sixth question was, in your opinion, was she putting on a fake persona? Paula then said, impossible to know, but I felt like we were two people actually talking to each other. We then asked her, how did you feel leaving? And Paula said she felt relieved. And we asked if there was a sense of accomplishment when she was done the interview. And then Paula said, yes, but I was suddenly aware of the huge risk I'd taken.
Last question. How did she look to feel when you were done? Paula says, angry. About an hour in, her husband called his sister, I think. She was a lawyer, and Homolka came away from the conversation telling me everything she'd already said was off the record. I explained that it could be now, but it wasn't before. Then her three kids became fussy, and she started to lose her temper. That is one of the big reasons I left. I was not asked to. I just sensed the emotional tide was turning and I would be the one to suffer. Paul is actually our professor. And as a someone who loved crime, when I first found out that Todd had actually tracked down Homolka and interviewed her, I was kind of in awe. And I remember telling her that, actually. I told her. I said, I can't believe this. So it's very cool that we got to now interview her about it. So we want to thank you again so much for that, Paula.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, thank you. So I guess that kind of wraps it up. I mean, the tapes, just to kind of mention what happened, Paula says this as well, tapes were destroyed by the Ontario government. Her house was destroyed.
In St. Catharines.
In St. Catharines. So they were living in St. Catharines before all of this went down. This was where a lot of the assaults were videotaped in. Bernardo, still in jail. Homolka, right now, is in Montreal. This is known because, this was after Todd interviewed her. So in 2016, Carla settled in Quebec. She was fluent in French and less known there. She went by the name, she changed her name to Leanne Borderlet. And because she was never charged with a sex crime, she couldn't even be registered, which meant she had no obligation to tell people that she sexually abused minors.
One more note. She also goes by three other aliases.
Ah, I did not know that. Okay, continue.
So her name is Carla Leanne Homolka.
Okay.
Also known as Carla Leanne Teal. Paul okay. Bernardo also changed his last name to Teal.
Interesting.
And she's also known, other than Leanne Borderlet, she's also known as Leanne Teal.
Okay.
And then Paul Bernardo, in fact, changed his name, like I said, to Paul Teal. He kept the Paul, just changed last name. So Carla, I guess, went with her middle name.
And that is quite literally where this leaves off.
Thank you for listening.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was a longer one. It was a lot of information to take in. If you were able to stick with us through the end and this didn't bother you, thank you. Right now, we are sitting at about an hour. So this is going to be interesting to see how this turns out. And also, yay, our professors did not go on strike. So we were able to bring you
another podcast.
Yes.
And that means we will see you next week. That will be a surprise. We don't know what the topic of next week will be, but we'll see you then.
Yes, we will see you next week. Just tune in.
You'll be in suspense just like we.
Yeah. But we're trying to make sure next week is more of a laid back one to kind of give a nice little breather from the two intense ones, especially this one. So thanks guys so much, and we will see you next week. This has been Alex.
And this has been Sarah.
Signing off from the Crime Times. Bye, guys.
Bye.